Webster's Dictionary defines compliance as the action or fact of complying with a wish or command. This is The Compliance Guide.
The Compliance Guide.
As a healthcare provider or healthcare professional, navigating the muddy waters of compliance can get tricky.
And that's why we're here.
Helping you mitigate risk while increasing your profitability. This is The Compliance Guide. Now, here's your host, Sean Weiss.
All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of The Compliance Guy. It is Tuesday, the 9th of January in 2024. And I am excited to be back with my very good friend, Terry Fletcher. And this is our first hashtag Terry Tuesday of the new year. So we got to spend some time together yesterday, Terry, you and I, for the first time this year on the Monday Coding and Compliance Roundtable, which I thought was an outstanding discussion with Scott, Paul, Stephanie, Christine, and yourself. So really looking forward to our discussion today.
Yeah, it was. It's good to get back into the swing of things, the grindstone, and there's so much going on for 2024. Boy, we're going to have fodder for the rest of the year, and we just got started.
Yeah, there's no doubt. So, you know, I think where we ended 2023, you know, we were talking a little bit about artificial intelligence, AI. And, you know, I am of the mindset that AI in healthcare just isn't there, right? Now, there's some folks that are like, oh, but you're wrong. AI exists. AI is in full bloom and, you know, we're using it in healthcare. In my opinion, I don't believe we are using AI in healthcare the way that people believe AI is being used in other sectors, in other industries. So let me pause there and let me turn it over to you and let's kind of get this conversation kicked off.
Yeah, I think the reason I really am glad you agree to talk about this topic is that, well, first of all, you know, Sean and I do not say that we are AI, you know, experts at all, but AI, just let's say what it is, artificial intelligence. So it means that somebody, we don't know who, programmed a system that is now kind of a prompt master, if you will. That's the only way I know how to really say what it is, where you put in a couple of words and then it figures out what you want to say. So it's almost like a reading your mind, if you will. Which, what if that isn't really what you wanted to say? So remember, magic tricks are not 100%. And I think a lot of people are saying this is like the miracle magic that it's so great. But I think it reminds me, and Sean, you can correct me if I'm wrong. It reminds me of people who are out there that will read a headline and think that that's law or published guidance instead of actually reading the article, because we know headlines are just to get clicks, to get likes, to get people to actually open up the document. And now when we get into AI, I feel like there's even more of a problem with it, especially as it relates to healthcare, because we're talking about patient safety. We're even going off the rails with compliance with this. We're talking about trusting a person or persons or outside sources that apparently are smarter than everyone else to bring in information based on what they think you mean to say on a couple of words. Perfect example. And I bring this up all the time because I've used the beta testing for GPT chat for, or chat GPT, sorry, for healthcare. And there's other little platforms because every time I comment on it, I get a DM in LinkedIn going, well, try ours. Ours is better. And one of them is the word ruptured, and it can be ruptured Achilles or ruptured spleen or, you know, ruptured whatever, ruptured appendix. And let's say you are a podiatrist or you are an orthopedic surgeon and you meant to say that the patient had a ruptured Achilles, but it learned that it wanted to put in that it was a spleen and that provider didn't go back and check. And you ordered all these tests and different, you know, procedures or whatever that had nothing to do with what the AI put in, that's a problem. The other thing is that I'm finding, and this is the last one I tested, and this was at the end of December when I had some time, is that, and I want to say this politically correct, and it's really hard to do this, but I'm finding that AI is biased. It's actually taking its own bias on certain patient populations, whether it relates to ethnicity or certain social determinants of health, or even there was one that was even biased towards female physicians, which I thought, whoa. And it just, it makes assumptions where there isn't, where it isn't appropriate. And it just, it's going to get people in trouble, not just from safety issues, which is a big, huge issue, but also, you know, with cascading claims, with trying to continue to order and add services. And it's just, it's scary to me because we, you know, you and I both tested outside of healthcare where somebody, you know, would send us here, try this, you know, see how you'd like it. And I like it for appealing insurance claims, for example. But what's really funny is I did them because, you know, I audit for payers. I actually did something with United Healthcare and with one of the MAC payers for Medicare. And I said, you know, I want to appeal a claim and I'm doing this thing with one of the AI chat GPTs. Can I do this? And you tell me what you think. And both of the payers said, this is outstanding. We would totally allow this to go. And I said, did you read the citations or the references I put in there or that were put in there? And they said, oh, no, let me read it. It was bogus. It had nothing to do with where I got the information. And they didn't even look at it, which, Sean, oh my gosh, you are somebody that not only deals with compliance, but how many times in depositions and on the stand in front of judges have you had to basically under oath say, this is why I think what I think or why I'm credible. And you don't get the luxury of somebody not checking your resources.
Yeah, no, you're 100% correct. You know, when I'm in court, when I'm going through a deposition, I have one coming up this Wednesday. You know, they, it's all about credibility, right? And, you know, I can't sit on a stand and say that, you know, I offered this opinion, but, you know, in my written report, not have anything cited to it. Listen, I may be an industry expert. I may have been doing this for 30 years. I may have a ton of knowledge, but at the end of the day, I am not the be all end all expert. You know, I am not Yoda. I don't have everything in my head. So it's critical to source and cite things correctly. And, you know, one of the big concerns that I have about using an AI platform, similar to what you were talking about, Terry, is, you know, a provider uses the term rupture, and now all of a sudden we're leaving it to a machine that has never had any contact with the patient. And based on a couple of terms being put into the search field, or into the parameters, you know, is now producing a progress note.
Well, and this is where it's concerning because artificial intelligence in healthcare, it's really a term that they use to describe the use of machine learning algorithms, like you said, parameters and software. And it's to copy human cognition and the analysis and presentation understanding of what they say complex medical and healthcare data, and to exceed human capabilities by providing new ways to diagnose, treat, and prevent disease. But they're saying that specifically AI is the ability of computer algorithms to approximate conclusions based solely on input data. So my concern is, how many times have you and I seen EMR data that's incorrect? And so, or all data from anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, all the time. Listen, you know, I have never been a huge fan of, electronic medical records. You know, just last year, in two cases at the end of last year, you know, they played episodes, and it was funny because they were both hashtag Terry Tuesday episodes where you and I got into a conversation about electronic medical records, and they tried to use it against me, which was kind of funny because, you know me. I kind of sit there and let the whole thing play out. And, you know, I asked them, is there a question in there somewhere? I mean, yeah, it was a really intelligent analysis that Terry made, or, boy, I was really spot on today. And I mean, you know, the jury kind of snickers and, you know, the prosecutors don't like it, you know, but, you know, defense counsel just kind of shakes their head and goes, that's what we put Sean on the stand for, to frustrate people. But, you know, the fact of the matter is this. I have never been a fan of electronic medical records. And the reason why I'm not a fan is because the majority, when they were created by non-clinical individuals. And they use an algorithm to be able to say that if you click this box, this box, this box, and this box, and you tabulate it based on a weighted, you know, value, it's going to equal a 99213 or 99214. Right. That's just not the way that it works. That's BS.
Yeah. And a lot of them, they don't even let them override the system to change it if it's wrong.
And I think the majority of the EMRs don't give physicians the ability to use their clinical judgment to provide complete and thorough analysis of what transpired during the evaluation between themselves and the patient. And what happens, but what happens a lot of times, not all the time, but a lot of times, is if a provider doesn't use the free text box and they rely on these, you know, smart phrases or drop downs or things of that nature, then sure, now you get this clone medical record. And that's my big fear about what's going to happen with artificial intelligence. They're going to use the same search parameters for every single patient that presents with A, B, and C as a symptom. They're going to put that into the search parameters, and it's going to produce these crap records. It may be 10 pages of information that has all kinds of sourced and cited, you know, research papers and things like that. But here's the funny thing. I actually went through one of the providers who sent me his progress note. He goes, Sean, take a look at this. And that's all he said. Take a look at this. And he didn't bias it in any way. And I said, okay. And I started looking at it, and I was like, all right, you know, me, I'm one of those. I'm going to look at the sources and the citations because I want to make sure that they are accurate. And when I went and actually pulled her, I think it was 12 or 13 cited sources in this 6-page progress note that ChatGPT created. Okay. For like a patient presenting with rhinitis.
Your dissertation. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. They were presenting with allergic rhinitis. Oh, but, geez. You know, the fact is, when I looked at this 6-page document, okay, 12 or 13 cited sources, all these research papers, blah, 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 published papers, 8 of them weren't even correct.
Had
nothing to do with the cited source.
Right. Well, and the one thing that I think people miss, and I want to kind of, I don't want to say dumb it down, but simplify it, because I think sometimes people see AI and they just think that's above my pay grade. And it's like, okay, well, let's look at this. So first of all, we talked about the algorithms. It means that the processes of this algorithm or what's inputted data, it says it's trying to recognize patterns and behavior to create logic and to gain useful insights and predictions, learning, you know, machine learning models. They have to be trained using an extensive amount of inputted data. And the problem with that is that who's inputting it? Is it correct? Are there typos? Is it coming from the right place? Because two things are clear with AI algorithms, and as I've talked to people, they behave differently than humans in two different ways. And this is what they're thinking is so great about it. And this is what I think is so terrible about it. First of all, algorithms are literal. Once a goal is set, the algorithm learns exclusively from the input data and can only understand what it's been programmed to do. And patients aren't completely literal where they don't have, but what about, or they have this nuance. And some deep learning algorithms, they have what they call black boxes. We used to call those long time ago, our edits with CCI, but they can, these can predict with very extreme precision what could happen. But the problem is, and this is where the downfall is, and the reason we're even bringing this up is we want you to use caution in 2024 until HHS can get their act together and make sure there's safeguards and accountability. But they offer little to no comprehensible explanation to the logic behind the decisions, aside from the data and type of algorithm used. So you ask them, well, where did you get this from? And they tell you. It's kind of like when Sean and I do a consult or an audit at a practice, and they say, well, they always told us to do it this way. And we say, who's they? and nobody can tell us who they is. I mean, I'm like, okay, but why are you still doing it then if you don't know who that is? So it's
because we've always done it that way.
I know. So it's new in healthcare, and I'm all for technology. I mean, I am 95% virtual in my job and my career and what I do. And if it wasn't for that, I might be retired right now. So I'm really happy that we have technology that's taken us this far. But my concern is that the application in the medical industry, in the medical field, is that there's not enough safeguards, because greater consideration has to be given to the unprecedented ethical concerns related to the data mining, maybe even data privacy, the representation of bias, the hallucinations we mentioned. And right. Sean, didn't you do something on LinkedIn that you said, tell that story about you tried ChatGPT to post something. That was funny to me.
Yeah. Look, LinkedIn has decided to put a feature onto your post. When you create a post that says something to the effect of use AI to create your post.
I haven't used it. I didn't know what you did with it.
Yeah. So, me, when I create a post, I go through and, I write basically what's on my mind, and I know my style of writing, and I know what I'm trying to convey. And, a lot of times I'll cite, the Code of Federal Regulations or the Federal Register or the United States Code or, the Social Security Act or whatever it may be, the Medicare Program Integrity Manual. So I had this, probably 7 or 8 paragraph post that I was getting ready to put out. I think I had come real close to like the 1,249 characters that it allows you on LinkedIn, which I wish LinkedIn would stop limiting the number of characters. Anyways, I was like, let me just cut and, let me just copy this in case, something happens. And I hit, complete with AI or something like that, whatever it says. So I hit the AI button, and it took this, what I thought was a really good post that I had created with all my sources and citations and this and that, and it dropped it down to 2, maybe 3 sentences. And I looked at it and I said, well, that's not what I was saying. And it was just so frustrating, because, you plug in all of these codes. And when I say codes, I'm talking about Code of Federal Regulations, United States codes, Medicare Program Integrity Manual, Medicare Benefit, Policy Manual, all these different sections, Chapter 10, Chapter 12, Chapter 15, Chapter 8, whatever it is, Chapter 3. And the system, which is supposed to be so smart because it's machine learning, dumbs it down to something that doesn't have the first citation in it. And let me tell you, I hit reverse and it gave me back my 8 paragraphs or 7 paragraphs that I had written. And I was like, yep, that's a one and done.
It's crazy.
What a waste.
I like it for, administrative things. It's helpful if you're doing appeals. It helps, in the RCM department. It's helpful, if you need to write a paper and get an understanding of format. I mean, that's very helpful. But when we talk about healthcare, what concerns me? Well, first of all, the positives. I've seen it work when it comes to risk stratifying patients or, prediction medicine. I like that. It can predict certain things on mortality, medication effects, even adverse events following certain treatments. And, and I'm studying more of the acute coronary syndrome, with wearables, smartphones, internet-based technologies that have been inputted into this AI, these different AI models. But the problem and the growing area of concern I have found is that the AI model feels that they are non-inferior to humans. They've actually said that in some of the papers. They said that, our interpretation is better. And when a physician has inputted information, a doctor, he says, well, I tried to put in something that I didn't agree with. And they basically used a mean phrase and said that the doctor was wrong. The doctor said, I'm afraid this AI thing is going to hunt me down. It was like the Terminator, It was just like, it's scary. Listen,
Listen, did you see what happened with the robot that was in the car manufacturing facility in Detroit? I think it was.
I heard about it, but I didn't read all of it.
Yeah, the robot, or well, they call it a robot. It was a robotic arm using machine learning as it was programmed to, you know, put the screws or the rivets in certain places and to tune the engine a certain way. And because the worker was trying to correct what it was doing, the machine, I mean, this was all documented, it was caught on camera, the machine actually attacked the worker.
Oh, man.
I was like, wait, come on, what?
Yeah, yeah. This is the rise of machines.
Think back to the one with, before the slap heard around the world with Will Smith, you know, iRobot. I mean, that movie was way ahead of its time.
It was, yeah.
Look where we are. I mean, the machines are taking over. I mean, look what's happened, you know, to all the cashiers at, you know, Target and Walmart and the food stores.
Yeah.
You know, it's all McDonald's. Everything is now machines.
Well, that's why they're in California. In California, they're like, oh, you know, the $15 minimum wage is too low. It should be $25. And McDonald's like, okay, right. Well, guess what? We don't have any more people. We're just going to do it
all. Did you see? Yeah. And did you see that they are opening the first all robot controlled store in California? McDonald's or something like that. There's not a human in the entire store. It's robots flipping the burgers, dropping the fries, making the apple pies, putting on the condiments, wrapping the burgers, sticking it on the shelves, having to figure out what, you know, how long they could sit on the shelf before they have to, you know, throw it in the trash can. All the payments are automated, and I'm thinking to myself, here goes the unemployment rate.
Well, and the other thing is that when I learned this since you're a winemaker as well, I learned this years ago at a winery where I asked a question, and I know this is a little off topic, but it kind of comes back to this, where I said, we were at some winery and I said, how come your wine's different every year? And I really liked it. And I think it was BV Wines. How come it's not like a Kendall Jackson, for example, which I don't care for? And he goes, because that's all, you know, machine processed, machine done. He goes, and remember, when machines get into it, they don't recognize what humans do. So they don't know the difference between, you know, maybe a grape stem and a rat tail. I'm like, ew. And so when you said the machines flipping burgers, I was like, oh no.
Yeah. Listen, you know, you bring up a great point because I get asked about this all the time. At our winery, you know, we are a craft winery. You know, we make only 180 gallons of each wine at a time. Nothing is automated. Everything we do from, you know, initial, you know, once we receive the extracted grape juice, and we pump it into the first holding tank to do fermentation. And then every time we move it from one tank to another, when we're adding nutrients or charge or advance or whatever it may be, you know, and I have a lot of people that will come out and they'll be like, hey, you know, last year I had your bourbon barrel aged Cabernet Sauvignon and it was incredible and it was blah 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 and it's really good this time, it's incredible, it's great, but you know why is it, you know, more acidic this time? And I have to explain to people, because it's being done by humans. You know, we're a craft winery. If we had everything identical every single time, I would be a Josh, or I would be a Sterling, or I would be a Kendall Jackson, where they have the capability through algorithms to program the machines so that at every single time when they do something, it is identical and they get this and they're able to force the taste. Me, we do everything 100% natural. So our stuff is dependent upon the harvest. How good were the grapes? Did we source from Sonoma this time versus Napa? Did we source from, you know, Portland, Oregon? You know, how was the soil in Argentina this year?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. How are the grapes in Argentina this year versus, you know, those that are coming to me from the south of France or from, you know, the Chianti region or from the Sangiovese, you know, so people are starting to be programmed by the major news outlets that the way of the world is turning to the machines. And that's the worst possible thing that I think can happen. And I think providers are going to get absolutely crucified in fraud, waste, and abuse cases where it becomes cloning, it becomes clinical plagiarism, it becomes continuous cut and paste, because there will be absolutely zero variation from encounter to encounter when you use the same parameters for the same symptoms or signs for every single patient.
Well, that's I think you have to be careful of, and I think we can probably end it on this, is that, you know, I think AI is going to have its place, and you and I can't stop it. It's like a freight train coming right at us. But I think if we can make a suggestion to the listeners, is that what's helpful about it in the models that we're seeing that are actually, I don't want to say appropriate, but seem to be understanding their role in healthcare, is using it to predict. I like the predicting models, you know, saying that, you know, this is where AI is finding that X, Y, and Z could predict maybe some cancers, could predict adverse, you know, effects of certain things. But where they start to use it as an absolute for treatment, that's where I have a problem. Because like you said, just like that grape in the vineyard, everyone's different. You know, everyone's different. Everyone has different family history, different DNA, different chemical makeup. I mean, why do we have so many different blood pressure medications, you know, different medications out there if one size fits all? Some doesn't work for some patients. Some causes other patients to, you know, have heart problems if they use it. But other patients are like, no, this works for me. So people, keep in mind that if you are going to incorporate AI into your practice, do your due diligence, find out where it comes from, find out who's programming it. You know, don't just say, oh, well, this came from, you know, Google, so it must be perfect. And I'm not saying anything against Google. I don't want any cards and letters, but I'm just saying that there are other, you know, companies out there that are dedicated to healthcare that have your back here. They're figuring out that deep learning and the algorithms have to have physician input that are not perfect. Right now, the percentages that are coming up are about 83%. Well, what's happening to that other 17% of patients? So that's a really good start, but we need to have more oversight, safeguards, and somebody checking to make sure that this is okay.
Listen, 30 years ago, I was trained in advanced mathematics, statistics, and predictive analytic modeling by Frank Cohen. And you bring up predictive analytic modeling because I think that does have a place in the world of regulatory compliance and healthcare.
Me too.
I think, you know, looking at genomes, looking at DNA strands, looking at, you know, the things that scientists are, you know, recognizing through this augmented intelligence is great. And those advancements are much needed. One of the things that I love is Compliance Risk Analyzer with Frank Cohen. You know, that is a machine learning program that the more audits, the more data that you feed it, the more it's capable of predicting to within a minuscule percentage the claims that would actually be targeted by an insurance company based on time studies, based on RVU analysis, based on aberrance, based on being an outlier, all these different things. So I think there is absolutely a place in healthcare, especially on the administrative and regulatory side, to be able to use machine learning and to use an augmented intelligence. But I still think providers need to not take shortcuts, and they need to do their own documentation, because at the end of the day, you can't sit in a courtroom and go, well, ChatGPT created my progress note. Why am I being held to blame? Well, you're the genius that used it.
I know. And remember, you get in trouble for cheating at school. So, you know, I'm not saying it's complete cheating, but you need to do your own work. And remember, you can't use time, and as far as your E&M services, if you are having somebody else document your work, and that includes AI. You just can't. It's an AMA guideline. So
that's right.
All right.
All right. What a great discussion for the first one of 2024. I'm really excited. This is a great first week back for me on The Compliance Guy. We are now in season 7. We have more than 350 episodes in the vault. We had a wonderful Monday Coding and Compliance Roundtable. Outstanding episode with Terry Fletcher today. Tomorrow, Wednesday, I'm really excited. My first special guest of the year is Dr. Katie Deming, who's going to be sharing such an incredible story. And I can't wait for that conversation to take place. So Terry and I will be back next Monday for the Coding and Compliance Roundtable, and then we will have our next hashtag Terry Tuesday. So remember, until then, be good to yourself. But more importantly, y'all be good to each other. Take care.
You've been listening to The Compliance Guy. Sean has been doing this for 28 years. He holds 10 national board certifications. He's a partner and the vice president of compliance for Doctors Management, LLC. He's a subject matter expert in federal court. He's lectured at the most prestigious institutions. He's engaged with members of Congress in both chambers. So what we're saying is he's qualified? We hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, you can find us on social media @The Compliance Guy. See you next time on The Compliance Guy.